One of the themes that are present in both of these readings for today is that of being known and named versus being unknown and unnamed, anonymous. Each one of us shares some of both states of being. In some arenas, we are known and loved, appreciated and valued, and in others, we are just part of the background. It is this contrast of being alone, disconnected from others, perhaps disconnected from our true selves, bit actors on a larger stage, versus being with people in community, being included, part of the family, part of the community, integrated within and without. This diversity, this dichotomy that's so interesting and so frustrating about being human. I'd like to spend a few minutes today thinking about the characters we meet, especially in the first text, who may mirror who we are, at least in part, and then about ourselves, and then this day and this church's history. Please pray with me. Living God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, for you are our rock and our Redeemer, who goes with us along the way, our guide and our wisdom. Amen. In that ancient text from 2 Kings, we meet a leper, Naaman, a famous general. And he is suffering because of his skin disease itself and also because of the social and religious stigma attached to it. That puts him on the outskirts of polite society, even though he is part of it because he is so central to the Aramean's success in the world. We meet a slave girl, one of the spoils of war, torn away from her family, her playmates, her friends, her parents, perhaps siblings, away from her homeland. We are not told her name. She is nameless. And yet she is remembered as a key actor on the stage because she names a way forward for her master, Naaman, toward his own healing, inward and outward healing. We meet two kings, neither of them who are named, the king of Israel, the king of Aram. They are enemies. One is, or seems to be, supremely self-confident, concerned about his general's well-being, generous beyond belief, and careful to honor his counterpart, the king of Israel, who is fearful, lacks creativity, sees his enemy's letter and gift as a trick or a trap, and is unable to see his beyond his own very small world, because it's all about him. There's a prophet, Elisha, the successor to Elijah. He's a wise and powerful healer. He's confident in his God's ability to heal. He is not awed by success or fame or military might and the lure of riches. Those mean nothing to him. And he sends a messenger, also unnamed in the story, as a go-between, to announce a very simple way of healing to Naaman, that famous general who now stands humbly outside of Elisha's simple house in the street, awaiting good news. And yet, even though Naaman is in the presence of great spiritual power, a different kind of power than the power he has, and he knows it, he also has a great deal of pride. And he expects to be treated according to his rank and successful career. And we can almost hear him saying, as the messenger from Elisha concludes, we can almost hear him shout, "Doesn't he know who I am? What I've done?" I know none of us have ever met anybody like this. "I deserve better than to be told to wash myself in a foreign, insignificant, muddy stream. I could have done better at home." And then we meet his servants, who turn out to be very wise counselors indeed, also unnamed. They are brave enough to reason with him, and Naaman, it turns out, is a reasonable, rational fellow. They appeal to You know, this is simple. Why fight it? He goes beyond his wounded pride. He follows their advice. Dips himself 7 times, a holy number, 7, a complete number, in this little river, Jordan, and he is healed. And as the story continues beyond our reading today, he becomes a secret believer, a hidden believer in the Hebrew God as he goes back to his homeland. Anonymity. It's from the Greek anonymia. It means without a name, namelessness. Typically refers to a person whose personal identity or identifiable information is not known. It can mean the quality or state of being obscure. So, is perhaps this the same as not being noticed? Or not being valued for one's uniqueness? Or not listened to as we speak? Ignored, perhaps? Shoved aside? Whenever I come back to this word, whenever I was thinking about this word this week, immediately, for some reason, my mind first went to the word abandonment. I have no idea. Anonymity. No, abandon. Well, what word was that anyway? Maybe for me, in any way, in some non-rational but deeply emotional way, to be anonymous is to presuppose abandonment. To be shoved aside, to be left. For the promises of one's life to be not fulfilled. The promises of others to listen, to care for, to guide, to care. In some deeply soul-satisfying way, to not happen. None of us grows up planning to be anonymous. When I grow up, I'm going to be anonymous. So if we feel anonymous, perhaps for more people than just myself, inwardly that gets translated emotionally into something that's more hurtful. One has been abandoned in some way. We've been betrayed. The world has turned its back on us. We are ignored. We don't show up on the radar. Now, personally speaking, again, and it's not all about me, I mean to speak personally because I want you to look at your own lives and ask yourself, how do I feel about this for myself? I have felt unnoticed at times. I have felt not valued, not listened to, unwelcome. That goes for family, friends, churches, whatever kind of environment I'm in, I can pick up either the unwelcomeness or the not being noticed, or I can pick up also deep acceptance, being listened to, valued. The whole other opposite then, being anonymous. Now, I sometimes seek to be known, or at least acknowledged as present and accounted for. At other times, I'm content to live around the edges of the action. Most of the time when I'm in crowds, think San Francisco, Union Square, somewhere like that, I just love wandering through. Nobody knows me. I don't know anyone. I can do whatever I want. Well, within limits. But I'm not known. There's no demand on me because I'm not named. I have to be socially responsible, relatively. In San Francisco, I'm not sure, but anyway. But I can be just another person walking down the street or riding on the bus or driving the car or in the line at the store waiting to pay for my purchases. I can be anonymous. And I'm not happy about that. I'm kind of content. Unless I'm looking for someone who I expect to meet somewhere, and I know they're looking for me, then I want to be noticed. Then I want to be able to notice someone else. I want to be identified. There is Jeff. I know who he is. I'm supposed to meet him. It's also true that there is safety in anonymity. One can just be without demand of responsibility in word or action. To be known by name somehow confers the sense that something is expected of me. That's why very few people, well, not today, but usually very few people want to sit in the front row. If I sit there, the preacher might actually see me. Might ask me a question. Well, actually, most of the time preachers look over the front row. Sorry. Because they want to see what's going on back there. Well, maybe that's why you're sitting there. You want to be noticed, but not stand out. I'm not sure. We want to be noticed, but not stand out. So one may act more freely when anonymous. One may come and go more freely. One may hang out. A reason why a lot of people like really big churches. They can be anonymous. They can come and go. They can hang out, receive what they need, leave. They don't have to know anybody. They don't have to be known. Although, maybe underneath somewhere, they do want to be known in some way. Some people are just downright shy. It takes a lot of courage to go to a church, a new church, or to come back to one that one hasn't been to in a while. Maybe somebody's depressed, doesn't want to share all that stuff with other people. Someone doesn't want to be formally invited to join or do something. One just wants to be and then leave. It's harder to remain anonymous in small churches. We see each other. We notice who's there and who's not. Names and histories are important in small churches and small towns. I've lived in very small towns, and everybody knows everybody. And everybody knows your business before you do. And that's important in a small town. But think about all the anonymous people in the world that you can think of. Soldiers, the folks who work as bus drivers, dishwashers, cooks, parking violation officers, meter readers, people in suits, and homeless people. Think about the people on the tarmac when you're waiting for your plane to take off. You don't know them. They're just there fulfilling their task. They're anonymous. Think about all those hundreds of thousands of refugees seeking to cross some border somewhere today in this world, seeking safety, seeking food, seeking peace. They're all anonymous to us. Think about how people of another race look to you. Caucasians are famous for being criticized because people of other races look the same. I know, you never do that. Come on. Actually, in my experience, it goes both ways. I've been pastor of a Japanese American church. I've known many people of many races and churches. And just, you know, in San Francisco, white people look like everybody, you know, you don't stand out. One white person looks like another. It's like one Asian looks like another to us. What makes the difference is spending time with another person from another background, to getting to know the story, the skills, the history, the quirks, kind of like the body outline, what's different about each face. To really know someone and be able to tell them apart. Mother Teresa of Calcutta was famous for not only reaching out to those who are dying, but her mission was to reach out and help heal some of the biggest hurts in the world. Loneliness. Feeling not included, apart from. And especially, me trying to meet that awful experience of dying alone. Unknown. Anonymous. So back to the story. Who do you identify with? There is Naaman. He's proud. He's famous. He's privileged. He suffers. He's rational. He's a leper. Perhaps the foreign slave girl, the anonymous prisoner of war, who decides to be helpful to her owner. Naaman's wife, another anonymous person in this story. She's just there. The prophet Elisha, who is not awed by what often elicits great, actually, fear. His messenger, nameless, shuttling back and forth between powerful people with different kinds of power. Naaman's wise counselors. Where do you identify? Who are you in the story? And so, what does that say about how you see yourself? Where is God's love for you in this identity? How has the Lord touched your life to restore you to a sense of self within a caring community or outside of it? And where does a particular community of faith fit in, if at all? I have this annoying habit of asking personal questions from the pulpit. Here's another one. Who do you wish you could identify with in the story? One point we're always going to draw from this text is that though we may be anonymous in the eyes of many, and though we may endure many struggles with body, mind, and spirit, still, each of us can contribute very deeply to the life of the world, our family, our friends, our workplace, our community of faith, just by showing up, just by speaking loving truths, just by doing what's necessary for the other person's well-being. And that is a powerful truth. And there's another point, that though we may be well-known, well-connected, powerful in certain ways, each one of us also has need of the other. To keep us grounded, to keep us more full of God than full of ourselves, to help us find the way toward our own healing, the healing of the faith community, and in a small way, the healing of the larger world. I think this is what each and every Sunday worship, including today, is really about. Reconnecting us to one another and to our true selves. Beginning to heal old and new wounds. Reminding us that we need one another far more than we may be willing to admit. Rooting us deeply in God's love for each and for all. All to the end that the kingdom of heaven may be realized more fully than before. Within and through this particular community of faith. This is our Reconnect Sunday. With the theme of coming back into contact with one another, reestablishing relationships, determining to go beyond old hurts and wounds, to eat together, to break bread, an ancient symbol of friendship, and to recommit to one another in this interesting time called an interim pastorate, where everything is kind of up for grabs. May the word of the Lord from these passages sink into us and take hold and take root. Amen.